You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Hello and welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. To kick off our first hour on this Civic Media Spotlight, we have the Todd Alba Show. Todd talks about Wisconsin sports love with Pat Kreitlow of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow and Trick V. Olson of the Lincoln Project, which is the usual Wednesday guests. Also joining Todd are producers Sean Hainish and Paul Jaconi-Berry to share how they got involved with the amazing film No Packers, No Life.
On location, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. Todd Alba, along with Mr. Aaron Zommers, our producer and engineer back at the old world headquarters in downtown Madison. We are live on location here in beautiful Waukesha at the Majestic Theater, one of the main flagship theaters of Marcus Theaters here in Wisconsin, for the world premiere of No Packers, No Life, the story of the Japanese cheer squad for the Packers making the trip to the Mecca to Lambeau Field. Good afternoon, everybody. Glad you're along with us. It's going to be a fantastic special show. Surprises galore. But first of all, Mr. Zommers, how are things back in the old world headquarters in downtown Madison?
Well, on this fine
hump day,
they're pretty nice.
Thank you very much.
A little overcast, but and a little rainy, but not too bad. And I am looking forward to heading down to Waukesha later.
Well, it is October 15th, 2025, a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Thank you for getting the camel in there, all the unpacking. And we forgot that, yes, the camel made the trip here to the world premiere as well. I know, Zommers, you're going to be getting into your car right after the show and coming down here. It's going to be a great time had by all. Also joining us, as per usual, on Wednesdays, at least for the upfront part of the program here, the host of Mornings of Pat Kreitlow, every morning from 6 until 9 across the network, Mr. Pat Kreitlow from his Lake Wissota studios, and senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, and for purposes today, one of the owners of your Green Bay Packers, Trick V. Olson, joining us from his home outside of Arlington. Pat, how are you?
I'm good. It's always good to see you, especially when you're on location and giving us a little bit more Wisconsin flavor. It's always nice to see Trick V. Trick V and I go way back to when he did, and he was in third grade. They do the tour of the TV station, and I was anchoring the news at the time. I recall giving him a Werther's hard candy, and I knew that kid was going to go places and look where he ended up, right here on your show. So
yeah, right. Trick V, do you remember those days?
Yeah, I do remember them well.
Very grumpy Trick V today. You're going to be happy,
now,
Trick V.
I'm having back spasms. I heard.
Oh, my gosh. Are you excited? Well, let's get right into it, guys, because we have very special guests here on location with us at our remote desk here at the Marcus Theater, the Majestic Theater, one of the Marcus Theaters here in Waukesha. They are two of the co-producers of this wonderful film, world premiere tonight. We welcome back to the program Paul Jaconi-Berry and Sean Hannish. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
I'm so happy you're here, Todd.
I'm thrilled to be here.
And thanks for having us on the show.
Oh, it's really, really great. And for those that might not remember, we've had you on the show before at this very theater about a year ago for the world premiere of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. And here we are, guys, back with another great Wisconsin sports film.
Full circle.
I mean, it's amazing. You know, Wisconsin fans are the best in the world. I mean, they came out and supported Just a Bit Outside. I mean, Todd, thank you for all of the love you gave that film and all the love you're giving this film, because I think these are the types of films that kind of give back, that, you know, it really, both films are kind of a mirror to Wisconsin sports fans, to this wonderful state. It's a really special group of people here. And I mean, I'm from here, so I can say that. So are you. But it's, this film is, it really celebrates the joy of what being a Packer fan is. And it really shines a light and in a mirror, in a way, on how hospitable, how welcoming People from Wisconsin truly are. I mean, I know they say Minnesota nice, but I guess it's Wisconsin really nice, even more nice.
Wisconsin welcoming is what I say.
That's
Wisconsin
right.
Welcome.
Well, it's our pleasure and honor, guys. And thank you for letting us be a part of this, because we love, as Pat said, telling Wisconsin stories, and it's one of the great privileges of this network to be a part of what you guys produce and distribute. So thank you for the opportunity. Trigby?
It's Minnesota passive aggressive.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. There's nothing nice about those people. Yeah. You go to US Bank Stadium, you'll see as many Super Bowl trophies as you see in the Mall of America, and they hold it over you all the way back across the borders. So.
Trigby, I love it.
Trigby is an avid fan. Paul, talk to us a little bit about what this film has meant to you, and slightly different path. You folks are more on the distribution and producing side. You didn't necessarily shoot this, but what's the journey been like to get here with this film?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It really is a logical next step for us after Just a Bit Outside. You know, a passion project for Sean and our other producing partner, Kelly Call, that we spent years bringing to fruition. And really, when we brought it to the people of Wisconsin and saw the response and saw just how welcoming the people of Wisconsin were to the film and to us as filmmakers. And we really looked at each other and said, you know, are there other stories that we can really tell? Because, you know, Wisconsin is a very special place. I had not spent a lot of time here until we shot Just a Bit Outside, but it's a place that's not, you don't see reflected a lot in the larger, broader culture necessarily, in the media. And so we thought, you know, we need another opportunity to kind of show Wisconsin back to itself, because this is a state that really deserves to be seen and to see itself. And, you know, Sean came across No Packers, No Life at the Wisconsin Film Festival and, you know, called me from the lobby and said, I just saw this movie. You got to see it. We got to see if we can do something. So, you know, the whole team watched it and we all saw how amazing it was. And then, you know, we got together with Craig Benzine, the director, Ty Morse, the producer and star of the picture, and just worked with them getting it ready to be seen by a big audience. You know, they had done amazing work and continue to do amazing work as we finish out the film. And again, I just think this is another wonderful story and opportunity to share the joy of Wisconsin fandom with the people of Wisconsin and the wider world, and really see the impact of Wisconsin culture halfway around the world in Japan, in a place that you would never think of. But I always tell people, and I mentioned this to Sean recently, I know more, I've lived in Los Angeles for 35 years, I know more Packer fans in Los Angeles than I know Rams or Chargers fans. Right. It's a true story. Yeah. And so, you know, Packers is one of those Wisconsin things that translates around the world, and I think this movie is just such a great opportunity for the people of Wisconsin to see the impact that they have, to see the way that their traditions and their culture has really spread around the world. And when you meet these Japanese, the Japanese Packers cheering team, when you meet these people, it is just so magical and joyful. Yeah. So I encourage everybody to come take a look.
Before I throw it back to Pat for a question, Sean, give us the 1 minute, 90 second setup for people that don't know. We'll play the official trailer a little bit later in the show, but give us the quick synopsis of this film, please.
Well, the quick synopsis is Ty Morse, who is the star of the film and producer, he has traveled to Japan well over 100 times, and he had never seen anybody in any Packers gear. But this one time, he's crossing that really big crossing in Tokyo, I think it's called Shibuya, and he sees a guy in a Packer jersey. And he's like, I can't believe I'm seeing somebody in a Packers jersey in the middle of Tokyo. And he goes up to him, and he whispers, go Pack, go. And the guy turns to him and goes, go Pack, go. And then Ty goes, go Pack, go. And all of a sudden, the two of them are chanting, go Pack, go, in the middle of Tokyo. And this guy is on his way to a karaoke bar and invites Ty. And Ty's like, wow, okay, I guess I'll go sing karaoke. It wasn't for karaoke. It was to meet the Japanese Packers cheering team, which was hosting its off-season annual event where they show their favorite game of the previous season. And the 30, 40, 50 members of the cheering team were there. And Ty was like, who have I just met? He goes back to Green Bay, tells all his friends all the stories, shows them some of the video he shot. And he's all of his friends say, let's fly them over to see a game at Lambeau.
And I love it.
So they opened up bedrooms for them. I mean, they housed them. There weren't hotels involved. They brought them into their homes. And from what I've learned from Ty, the Japanese are very scheduled. You know, they schedule things well in advance. And so it's kind of a miracle to get 30 of them to come over to see a game in Lambeau Field in the fall. And so this is that film. It's about a lot of these most of them had never traveled to the United States. So they went from Tokyo to Green Bay, Wisconsin. That was their first experience of America. And that's what the movie's about. It's about building friendships and bonds, you know, through this fandom. It's a very special fandom, but really what it's about in the end is people and passion and community.
Pat Crailo.
It just looks so fun, and I can't wait to, you know, having just seen the trailer, kind of experience the joy that way. I've been very fortunate in my life, or it just means that I'm very, very old, that I've been able to travel to lots of different places, and in almost any place where I've gone to look for a Packer bar, because there are Packer bars everywhere. You know, I've seen them in Brownsville, Texas, and I've seen them in Manhattan, and I have been to one in Sydney, Australia, and it is just so thoroughly international. And so I know that this one is all about this, you know, cheer squad in Japan. But as you have been making this or putting this together, getting set to show it, have you had a couple of other instances where you say, I'm sorry, there's a Packer fan club where? There's a Packer bar where?
I think that's, yes, 100%. In fact, there's a little portion towards the end of the film where we have pictures of other Packer bars. We have one that's in Australia. I was at Waz's bar in Paris. Wow. They're everywhere. It is truly, they have that website, Packers Everywhere, because they're everywhere.
Yep.
But yeah, you know, it has brought up a lot of stories from people who, when they're traveling, tell us, told us about, and have told other people about all the amazing Packer bars there are around the world. So yes, you're correct. This is one of those places.
I think that's great. Pat, anything else before we let you go? And to make sure we tell us what's coming up on Mornings with Pat Crailo tomorrow morning from 6 until 9.
We'll have, of course, the one, the only Joe Zepecki that will help us sum up a lot of what's happened in politics in Wisconsin this week, including the No Kings protest. What does he think of Sean Duffy and the others saying that this is all the work of Antifa? So we will get into that, and he will give us the pep talk that we need for the Brewers to become, I believe it would be the 10th team in 7-game playoffs in baseball history to come back from 0-2 and win this thing. We won 14 That's in right. a row already. We can win 4 in a row. Nothing to it, guys.
Nothing to it. No, I appreciate that, Pat. Absolutely. We'll be looking forward to hearing from you tomorrow morning. About a minute left. Any other questions for Sean or Paul here before you leave us, Pat?
You won't have enough time to get them all, but you want to give just a few of the other places where this is going to be appearing? I know the Chippewa Valley isn't one of them yet, but
you got
Rothschild up by Wausau, so WXCO listeners can hear that one.
Yes, we do have one in Rothschild. We're in La Crosse. We are in both theaters, both Marcus Theaters in Green Bay, two in Appleton, and let's see, where else?
La Crosse,
mm-hmm. and all over southeast Wisconsin and pretty much all around Milwaukee. And
do the trolling one. You're trolling with this as well.
And thank you, Marcus Theaters. We're trolling Bears fans, and we're opening up in Gurnee, Illinois.
Yes.
So come on out. Wear your gear.
I think that's fantastic. And you can find more information on all these tickets. Buy them online. Marcus Theaters website. I believe it's MarcusTheaters.com. MarcusTheaters.com.
And it's we'll come back at the end.
Pardon?
Marcus Theaters, and it's theater, R-E-S, not E-R-S.
Oh, thank you. All right, thank you, Summers. Appreciate that. All right, we'll find those tickets there. Pat, thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week, and everybody should tune in tomorrow from 6 until 9 at Mornings with Pat Crailo. And when we come back, we'll talk with one of our Packer owners. Trigby Olson will continue to join us. He'll have some questions of Packers lure, I'm sure, and more on this great film of No Packers, No Life. We are live on location here from the Majestic Theater in beautiful Waukesha, Wisconsin, home of WAUK on 5:40 a.m. and now on 100.3 FM on your dial. It's the Todd Allball Show across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Following the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the John and Gordy Show. Amy Horak from David J. Frank joins the show. Amy talked about how fall weather, with its cooler temperatures and less rain, signals the plants that the seasons are changing. Amy also had advice on proper tree and plant care. including the importance of spacing trees to ensure they have enough room to grow and thrive. So tune in.
Yes, sunflowers. Oh, yes. WMDX, John and Gordy, talking about sunflowers this morning, though, actually.
Yeah. It's a beautiful sunny start this morning.
But just a beautiful morning so far. Yeah, it's going to be a nice day as well.
Yeah, we're going to get more clouds, though, and maybe some rain on the way tonight. I think we need the rain. It's been pretty dry lately. Yeah. High today, about 64. Right now, it's a cool, we're in the upper 40s.
Yeah.
And Amy Horak joins us now from David J. Franks. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, guys. How's it going today?
Good, good. Good. Am I right? Do we need rain?
Yeah, we definitely need a little bit of rain this time of year. But in the fall, either way, the rain starts to slow down and it kind of triggers the plants and lets them know that, hey, the seasons are changing. There's less water. Time to start relocating where our nutrients are. The leaves will start changing colors. The color has been progressively getting more and more beautiful by the week. So they're just, it's a good signaling time for the plants to know, like, hey, winter's coming, time to prepare ourselves and just shut down for the season.
Now, you're with David J. Frank.
Yep.
And what do you do for them?
So I am one of their sales rep for the Madison area, but we do service the greater Milwaukee area as well. So helping people figure out just coming to your property, taking a look, and from a horticultural perspective, since I did go to UW-Madison to do my studies, I can definitely take a look, and along with our other sales reps, they can definitely help you assess your landscape to see what it needs from either a nutritional standpoint, if you want to do renovations to it, whatever it really needs to help get it to a healthier status, we can definitely assist with that.
Yeah, I actually had a visit from a horticulturist a long time ago when we first bought our home, and they went through the yard and pointed out trees that were kind of problematic and the better trees to keep and make sure you know you're taking care of them and trimming them. So, I mean, that was really a big help.
Yeah, it definitely is helpful. I know a lot of times, sometimes we plant more trees than are needed in a lawn just to sometimes have more chances of having good establishment and trees that are going to survive. But after a while, you do definitely want to thin them out. If trees are too close to each other, they'll start competing. It's really noticeable in pines or spruces if they're too close together. Those bottom branches will start dying off where the tree touches. They don't want to be that close. So you always have to remember, it's a little tree when you buy it and plant it. You have to think of the future when that tree is 30, 40, 50 years old. How big is it going to be? Don't put it right next to your house. Don't put it smack dab next to another tree that's going to get 50 feet tall.
Well, you kind of brought it up here. You know, I have a couple Mugos out there, and one got needle blight. And as a consumer, I thought I could take care of that with a spray of some sort, but it really doesn't do anything at all, does it?
Depending on the kind of spray you use, like needle blights and different types of fungal issues, it's always best to prune out the most diseased or damaged branches. That way you're removing the actual cause of the infection. You're removing some of those fungal spores or bacteria or virus.
That returns then, right, the next year, doesn't it?
It can, but if you prune it out and take like the damaged plant matter off your property, don't leave it there. Make sure you clean it out fully so that the diseases can't keep spreading. But if you spray it too, you want to make sure you keep up on spraying it one time and thinking it's going to be good. That's not always the case either. Making sure you keep up with it. Otherwise, diseases or insects can build up resistance to different chemicals that you use on them. And then you actually make it even harder to control the problem.
Okay, and then now this time of year when people are out mowing their grass maybe one more time or a couple of more times before winter.
Yeah, might get
one. Do you mow it short?
Two.
What's your suggestion on that?
You can definitely kind of mow it shorter so that way it can help prevent any animal damage over the winter time. But definitely at this time too, I mean, once your grass is not growing anymore and if you still want to use your mower with like a bagger on it to help mulch up the leaves and keep up with the leaf fall over the next couple of weeks, that's definitely an option too. Just because raking, you know, kind of your back hurts after a while of raking too long, unless you got like a leaf blower, and then to kind of make sure you have some earplugs so you don't go deaf the whole time.
Well, what about just mowing over the leaves and using it sort of as a mulch?
Yeah, you can do that too if you don't want to pick them up. It is, I mean, it's nature's best fertilizer. The trees grow it all year long. It's natural. It's that's what the forest floor is naturally, you know, doing is decomposing all of that organic tissue and just recycling it back into the earth. The earth is amazing at what it does, and it had a plan the whole time. So let it. Sometimes letting it do what it's supposed to do is a little bit better for everyone.
Okay.
Well, you know, it's one of those things now where everything is thinning out. You know, the trees are losing their leaves. The bushes are losing their leaves. And now everybody's yard looks really bad because because of all the damage that took place over the summer. Now we have to kind of clean that up. Is that another big issue for people? You know, the trimming, maybe even edging of your lawn on the sidewalks.
Yeah,
and
getting the power edging done this time, especially since it's nice and cool out. This is like perfect weather for outdoor labor, honestly. So if you need to do those last types of things, especially too, if it's rained a little bit, it just makes that soil softer, makes it a little easier on you to work on it. So definitely getting those things cleaned up. And if you're someone that loves the bugs and birds, you know, sometimes just leaving that stuff in the yard too, it's really up to personal preference. Sure. If you want that clean manicured look, if you want that more natural scape to help feed pollinators and other insects.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you, really.
Well, thanks for giving me an excuse.
Yeah, yeah. All right. I appreciate it, Amy. If people want to find out more, how can they do that?
You can go to davidjfrank.com. And if you guys ever want to look for wintertime work, we also do snow removal. So if you want part-time employment with us, just to check it out, see how it goes. Otherwise, you can stick around for the spring, too.
Well, that's a great idea, yeah.
John and I are always looking for part-time work. So that's
okay. Snow is fun. It's a winter wonderland.
Oh, yeah, I know. Lovely. I know. Amy, thank you for joining us. That's Amy Horak from David J. Frank. And that's going to do it for us for today. Tomorrow, Mike McCabe will join us, as he does every Wednesday. John, have a great day.
Well, I will certainly try. And Dom, you too.
Oh, thank you.
Answer that phone. What was that? We'll talk about it later.
Yeah, that was
somebody really trying to get a hold of me. All right.
I'm trying to get a charger at my home for my EV.
Yeah, we've heard about it. Have a great day.
The John
The John and Gordy Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WMDX weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Following the John and Gordy Show on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the Maggie Dawn Show with Maggie. The Supreme Court's term raises alarms with a pivotal case potentially gutting the Voting Rights Act. Devon Ambrust, Senior Director of Courts and Legal Policy at the Center for American Progress, critiques the court's anti-woke bias and historical amnesia, warning of dire consequences for minority representation.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. If you're just joining us, this is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've talked with this next guest before on this program. I always enjoy our chats. He's been very patient to get him back on the Maggie Dawn Show to talk about the beginning of this new Supreme Court term. It kicked off on October 6th, a mere 10 days ago, and there is a massive case that the court will be weighing in on in very short order that may, in effect, gut the central provisions of the Voting Rights Act. When you take this in context with the mid-decade gerrymandering being commandeered by our king, President Donald Trump, it spells portends a very, very dire future, not just for Democrats, but for Republicans as well. So with all of that as prequel, it is my privilege and honor to bring back to the show Devon Ambrust. He is the Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. He has an absolutely stellar resume. I'm not going to read all of it to you fine folks, but suffice it to say, he served as a senior counsel lawyer to Representative Jamie Raskin and helped Representative Raskin managed the portfolio of policy issues that were before the House Judiciary Committee. That was a real boring committee for a whole gamut of years. Of course, I joke. Welcome back to the show, Devon. We've got a lot of action in the Supreme Court this term, and it's starting out with a bang.
It is evergreen, and John Roberts' hatred for the VRA, which has been a through line of his career since he's been with the Reagan administration, is now his life's mission is coming to fruition when he has the opportunity to strike down Section 2 of the VRA, the last remaining bastion of the Voting Rights Act that protects minority voters across the country.
So this is this case called Louisiana v. Calais. Tell us what that case is about and how it may, again, render null, void, and no longer enforceable the second section of the Voting Rights Act.
Sure, and I'm sure you've talked to your audience a lot about the mid-decade redistricting.
Yes.
So after every decennial census, the states are supposed to redistrict. And Louisiana got 6 seats, and they drew a new map, and they have about 30% African-American population in the state. They drew one majority minority district, one black district in the entire state, even though 30% of the population is black. The Fifth Circuit, which is not known for being progressive by any means, said,
I would
y'all
say quite the opposite. I would say quite the yeah. opposite, right? The Fifth Circuit has been sort of the most Trumpian of circuits.
Yes.
But sorry for the interruption.
No.
The Fifth Circuit even said no good.
The Fifth Circuit said, no, you're violating Section 2 of the VRA. You got to redraw the map. So they redrew and gerrymandered the heck out of it and drew a snake straight through the middle of Louisiana to create a second majority minority district, a second black district. And they did it in such a way as to protect Speaker Mike Johnson, Steve Scalise, a couple other of the white members from down there. And then the people who describe themselves as 3 non-African-American voters, which means white folks, decided that this was a violation of their voting rights and it was a dilution of their voting rights. And so they challenged it. Court heard argument last year. For whatever reason, they couldn't come to a decision. And they resubmitted it for argument. But this time they said, please tell us whether Section 2 of the VRA violates the 14th and 15th Amendments, which are the Reconstruction Amendments, which were specifically brought into being for the purpose of protecting the newly freed slaves 160 years ago. The purpose of the amendments was to end discrimination against black people, to provide some form of equality. And so now they're saying, wait, maybe the Voting Rights Act, which was enacted to enforce the 14th and 15th Amendments, is unconstitutional some way? It's really just turning the entire history and concept of originalism on its head, despite the fact that 6 members of the court claim to be originalists.
Yeah, it is truly shocking, as is what I'm going to call this complete inversion. And we see it in case after case, and frankly, in white grievance and fragility after white grievance and fragility, especially from the right. It's like, this is reverse racism. No, it's not. Black people are, minority folks are 30% of the population in the state of Louisiana. They gerrymandered the hell out of it to make sure that black people only got 1 out of 6 seats or their preferred candidates. If it's inverted racial discrimination, what are you getting, like too many seats, too much power?
It's so much a larger part of this anti-DEI movement that's pushing through the right. There was a case, Fearless Fund, out of the 11th Circuit in Atlanta, where they said that a black woman-owned venture capital firm couldn't only provide funds to black woman-owned companies, despite the fact that venture capital funding only goes to less than 2% of black woman-owned companies. I think something like 90%+ goes to white-owned companies and venture capital firms. So that 2% apparently was discrimination. Same thing last year in Students for Fair Admissions, when they completely ended the concept of racial considerations in collegiate admissions. They said, we're not permitted to look at whether you are, you know, if whether our campuses can kind of mirror the makeup of the nation. They're not allowed to do that. They are completely doing it all in the concept of white people are being discriminated against because when you've never had to face inequality, equity is persecution.
This is so baffling to me. Like, white and especially white rich people, right, you are controlling the vast amounts of productive capacity. You take down the vast amounts of wealth in this country. You take up the vast amount of seats in all of our Ivy League universities and colleges. You are the ones that have always had the greatest power, and someone else is saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't let the legacy of that dominating impact be what we have in perpetuity in this country, and that's reverse discrimination.
And that's the kicker of it all, because the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were intended and passed to create a level playing field for everybody in the country, regardless of racial makeup. And throughout the South, throughout the Jim Crow, post-Reconstruction era, those were ignored completely. We saw in the 1960s I won't say resurgence, but an insurgence of people saying, we need to be treated as human beings. We are men. That's what their signs said. We are men. And there was a huge shift in the way that equality has been advanced over the course of the last 60 years. This is crazy. The law school that I went to had its first black professor hired in 1990. All right. Yeah. That's an insane thing to me. And I come from the South. So at this point, what they're even doing is they're not even ignoring things. They are shifting the narrative to say that these things that were intended to create equality among all Americans and to end discrimination against minorities were actually supposed to be racially neutral. They were intended to be colorblind, and that is an absolute bastardization of every historical tenet that we know about the Civil War.
Yeah, again, all of these originalists are ignoring the precise purpose of this. It wasn't to create a faux concept of equality that only exists under the law, that has no relationship to the actual reality of how opportunities, access, wealth, power, influence are distributed here on Earth One.
On a similar bent, we can talk about originalism in the context of creating a kingly presidency by this Supreme Court and Trump the U.S. when they said presidents are indeed above the law. Apparently none of them have ever read the Declaration of Independence, which has the litany of abuses that we revolted against King George for. And Donald Trump has been speed running those abuses in the last 9 months.
It's like he's got a punch list.
Ticking them all off, and we're coming real close to violations of the Third Amendment with you can't be forced to quarter soldiers in homes. So they're not making us, living in D.C. There are some, I actually feel bad for these guys because they're away from their families and their work and everything. And there's guys in battle rattle guarding the Mike's, the Jersey Mike's sub shop that I go to a couple times a week. And I always ask them, like, are they going to let you guys go home anytime soon? And they're like, we don't know. And they're not happy.
No,
they're not happy. They don't want to be doing this. But because we're living in a war zone in a city that I've lived in for 15 years and have never seen a crime occur, that's just the altered reality that we live in. I like that you call that Earth One.
Yeah, Earth One. President Johnson said once something along the lines of, if you can convince the white man that he's better than the best colored man, he won't notice that you're picking his pocket. And so much that the distractionary nonsense around the anti-woke, which is like you are against the diversity that makes our country strong, you're against the equity that enables us to continue to be a superpower, and you're against the inclusion that we fought the Civil War to enshrine in a system of laws. That's what anti-wokeism is. And it occurs to me, as we've seen the Supreme Court consistently turn away from originalism when convenient, there is no through line that you can discern that is theoretically, from a legal analysis approach, consistent from case to case. It stands out in sharp relief when we look at whether we're talking about Fearless Fund, right, and the fact that despite the reality of venture capital money flowing almost exclusively, except for a razor-thin amount, infinitesimally small percentages to black women, ignoring that reality and saying a black female-run venture fund, which is private, by the way, she can't decide to exclusively fund other black female-led startups. The Voting Rights Act case, which is now going to say that somehow white people deserve to have an over distribution of congressional seats, and the Harvard SFFA case, right, that says, no, we can't consider race amongst a collection of factors to ensure that our students have an Earth One experience that is reflective of the American population. And yet, when this very same Supreme Court looked at the removing of rights, not the conferral of a benefit through venture capital, right, through college admissions, through voting access, that conference of a benefit or this affirming of rights of historically disadvantaged and, you know, a population of people that were enslaved by white people, as soon as it comes to stripping away rights and taking people's, then they said in the Alien Enemies Act case, yeah, you can absolutely look at race as a number of factors, which all are basically pretexts for race. So they're saying, yes, you can racially discriminate to strip people of their Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights, but you certainly can't do that to ensure that they have equal voting rights, access to capital, or education.
No. No, I want to add two things that you said.
I want you to hold those two things, Devin. Okay. We've got to squeeze in a little of a few messages. It's going to be a really, really quick segue here, folks. Stay with us. We got Devin Ombres of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're talking about the Supreme Court's new term and basically the wholesale endorsement of the attack on black folks by the Supreme Court. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 4 until 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
To end the first hour of the Civic Media Spotlight, we have Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. There is an ongoing effort by far-right conservatives to elevate the life of murdered activist Charlie Kirk into something worthy of a national holiday. Pat Kreitlow isn't buying it and notes that while political violence is not allowed, he's among those who won't stand for people trying to whitewash Kirk's legacy of racism, misogyny, and division.
Up on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, you can find the written versions of the longer versions of things that we post up on social media. We put a lot up on Facebook, certainly on Instagram as well, a little bit on TikTok. And then sometimes we write the accompanying stories and put those on the website. And on the website right now is my latest updated story on the governor's race. Each one started with the same graphic, a graphic of 12 different people who have been or might run for governor. Are they in? Are they out? Is there a question mark next to their name? And everybody on that photo has something new next to their name, that they're in or they're out, except one, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. Waiting to see what he does, what he decides on. Remember, we talked to Earl Ingram 1 week ago today, and he said that he had talked to Mandela Barnes and that, you know, we should not be surprised if he gets in the race. And we'll ask Earl coming up after 8 o'clock if he's got any new insight on that. But the story, the newest story on the website also says, you know, what about the significance of Josh Call not running for governor? What does that mean for Wisconsin? And beyond the governor's race, it really has something to do with providing some security when it comes to standing up to the Trump administration. For all the details on that, see my article over on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. All right. This is a case where somebody has put something in the comment section, and I feel like this is a good time to address this. And it deals with the Affordable Care Act and the whole note about the government shutdown. And I've made note that Republicans want to make healthcare less affordable, because that is the net result of what they are doing. When you are letting the enhanced tax credits expire that made the Affordable Care Act policies more affordable, when you're making the cuts that you're making to Medicaid, when you're putting more eligibility red tape in the way, you are making healthcare less affordable. And why would you do that? Well, probably because you're doing the bidding of some big campaign donors, people who work in corporate America, for-profit health insurance companies, and things like that. So we hear a lot about the marketplace and the magic of competition. It doesn't work that way in healthcare. And I'll tell you why. right after I share this comment that says, your premise that Republicans want to make healthcare less affordable is totally wrong. As a small business owner with just under 100 employees, we have seen firsthand the effects Obamacare has had on health insurance. We used to be able to pay 100% of our employees' insurance. Once Obamacare kicked in, premiums have continued to rise to the point where we are only able to pay 50% of the cost. This started immediately after the legislation was passed. Not only have premiums skyrocketed, but coverage, mainly deductibles, and total out-of-pocket has increased substantially. It is now catastrophic insurance. Do away with Obamacare. Now, I appreciate that that comment came in. That comment is well taken. It is a comment that I have heard many times over the years. And it is a comment that, in my point of view, has amnesia over what the world was like before the Affordable Care Act. And I don't know if this amnesia is tainted to some degree by partisan politics or what, but we knew for many years before the Affordable Care Act that our health insurance system in this country was broken, and that the policies that were available, that the commenter says were so much more affordable back then, why were they affordable? They were junk. And most people didn't know that. The people that did not have to make a claim under their health insurance understandably say, wait, I paid so much less back then. Why am I paying more now? Because the policies you have now, thanks to the Affordable Care Act, actually cover some of the things that you need. Prior to that, all we heard from for-profit insurance companies, and I know this as the spouse of a physician, but also as a patient myself, was nope, we're not covering this, we're not covering that. I know you paid your premiums all those years, but it turns out that we can tell you no, and we are going to tell you no. Now, 2 years before the Affordable Care Act, there was a poll by the Commonwealth Fund, and it found, not surprisingly, 82% of Americans wanted the healthcare system overhauled. They were sick of the inefficiency, the expense, and again, always being rejected after years of paying their healthcare premiums. Before the Affordable Care Act, we had 50 million Americans or more who were uninsured. That number has shrunk to such a low figure that we did not think was possible prior to the Affordable Care Act passing in 2010. We had an economy that was overburdened by healthcare expenses. There was so much out-of-pocket cost. There were so many people hitting, you know, these lifetime caps, even though they had chronic illnesses. But suddenly their insurance that, again, they had paid for was useless. Healthcare was gobbling up 18% of our gross domestic product. 18%. Compare that to 9% in Australia, 11% in Canada, 11% in Germany, 9% in the UK. And all of them had done something to overhaul their healthcare system that made healthcare more accessible and more affordable. And last but not least, all of the Americans who were caught in job lock. They were holding on to crappy jobs. The only reason they stuck to these miserable jobs was it was the only way they could get health insurance. And through the Affordable Care Act and those subsidies that make private health insurance more affordable, which is what conservatives always say they wanted, by making private insurance for the individual, for the couple, for the family more affordable, people didn't have to stay in their garbage jobs. They could go do something else that was more fulfilling with better coverage. So yeah, the premiums have gone up because you're getting what you paid for. You're getting coverage that covers more of the things. Should it be fixed? Could it be made better? Absolutely. For over a decade now, we've been saying to Republicans, help us make it stronger, help us make it better, help us cover more people. And the answer has been no, repeal and replace. But by the way, we don't have a replacement. We just want it repealed, which only helps one group, the group that keeps telling you no while they're taking your premium money. State Senator Chris Larson is coming up next.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 9. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.